Rodgers in trouble. It's going to get there. He turned 32 yesterday. Does he have a vintage moment in it? In the end zone, it is caught for the win. Richard Rodgers with a walk-off touchdown. A game ender for the Packers.
Our guest this week is CBS sideline reporter Tracy Wolfson. Tracy is going to be doing the Final Four this weekend in Phoenix, and she's also the number one team sideline reporter for CBS's NFL coverage. Tracy, I think the Final Four is one of the cooler events where you've got four different fan bases, in addition to a bunch of casual fans in town. This year, UNC is the traditional power, and then there's three schools that really haven't been there before, or at least in a while. How do you think having those three newcomers this year is going to change the dynamic, if at all?
Well, I got to be honest, for us, it's great because you see a different, you know, passion level because it's not teams or coaches that have been there every year. Now, granted, of course, anytime you make it to the Final Four, you know, you're thrilled and exciting. And but when you have teams that have never been there before, there's going to be a lot of wide eyes, you know, a lot of, you know, first time doing this, first time, you know, working with CBS and these specialty shots and having fun. And then you're going to get these fans from these fan bases that have never really had the opportunity or a reason to go to the Final Four. So I think, you know, North Carolina always travels. And I think the fact that it's also out west, how perfect that we get two West Coast teams, you know, in this game this year. I mean, it just so happens. So we're fortunate that way. And like you said, you'll get these fan bases and you'll also get the casual fans who are going as well. So I'm looking forward to it. I think it's going to give it a different feel this year.
You had a randomly eventful first weekend of the tournament in terms of stories that came out of the games that you and your crew were doing. The first one was a Louisville player who was young thought that you were a spy stealing their place. Has anything like that ever happened before in your career?
No, that certainly was a first for me. You know, it's funny, and Rick Pitino said it to me actually after the game as well, before he said it at the press conference. And, you know, doing my job, you're peeking in, you're trying to listen to whatever you can. And, you know, yeah, the kid thought that I was stealing their plays and selling it to Jacksonville State. So the funniest thing is that after the fact, we met with Coach Pitino and his players for the next game against Michigan, and he said, you know, he's like, they were actually smarter than I thought. They found out you were a Michigan grad, so then they figured you were really stealing our plays. So he was joking with it. You know, he's one of the greatest coaches to work with. He gets it. I know him well. He knows me well, which is why it was so funny to begin with.
You mentioned you're peering in and you're trying to blend in and hear things. There's definitely a line, though, between what you hear and what you're allowed to tell the millions of viewers who are watching. How careful do you have to be to not reveal trade secrets and things of that nature?
Extremely careful. I mean, you're never going to reveal a play or a trade secret like you're saying. But there's sometimes, you know, foul mouth, obviously, you're not going to talk about, you know. And then there's some things that are said in the huddle that are just meant to be said in the huddle. And I'll bring it to my producer's attention and say, hey, this is what he said, but I don't think it's right for air, or I don't think we should do this. Or you never want to, you know, have an issue with a relationship with your coach going forward, because you're going to be working with these coaches and these teams and these players for a long time, not only in this tournament, but future tournaments and future games you're going to be doing. So you don't want to ruin a relationship over a 30-second, you know, hit. So you really have to be careful of what you hear and what you say. And you're just trying to, you know, give an inside glimpse of what this team is all about at that moment of time during that game.
Also, during the first weekend, you mentioned Michigan earlier. Your crew was doing a Michigan-Oklahoma State game, and all of a sudden, there were some broadcast hiccups, and you had to bring your microphone over to Jim Nance, Bill Raftery, and Grant Hill, who had to huddle around it and share it. Can you give the play-by-play of when you realized something was awry, and then how quickly you supplied them with the microphone, and how you knew to do that?
Sure. Well, this will be my second play-by-play that I'm doing because I was, you know, put in, you know, and had to pick up and do play-by-play for about 30 seconds there.
Right.
You know, the audio went off, and at first you don't know, is it, you know, what was happening? You know, there was a hiccup there, you're waiting, and on my end, you know, I still heard my producer no problem. So, you know, I'm paying attention, listening to what they're talking about, and waiting. Just, you're thinking it's going to be fixed instantaneous. And then all of a sudden, my producer says to me, okay, go. And I'm like, what? And I'm like, all right. And so, you know, you go back to the basics of play-by-play, you know, time, score, who's inbounding the ball. And I had about 30 seconds of it. We went to commercial, counted us down to commercial. And then in commercial figured, and kudos to my audio guy, who said, you know what, we have a wireless mic here. Why not give it to them? And so he ran it over. And, you know, as they say, the rest is history. They turned into the Temptations with the three of them and turned what, you know, could have been, you know, an issue into a real fun, great story, memorable one of the tournament, and turned things around quickly and got back for the finish of that tremendous game.
Yeah, no, that was definitely a crazy occurrence. Another crazy thing that you had to deal with a few years ago was that gruesome Kevin Ware injury going back to Louisville. We talked about how you have to have a delicate balance with what you're allowed to say, what with information you glean from the teams versus what you don't bring to air. With injuries, it's these really tricky situations where it's information that's critical to the outcome of the game, but it's also sensitive because there's somebody who could be in severe pain. How do you draw the line between feeling like a rubbernecker in those types of situations versus doing what really is like arguably one of the most important aspects of your job?
Yeah, that was the toughest situation I've ever been put in. With the Kevin Ware injury, I was sitting right there. So I reacted just like everyone else did when they saw it. And then you had to realize in your brain and tell yourself, okay, well, you know what? You have to actually get to work. And it goes from being a sports story to a news story. And you have to kind of flip your switch there and report the facts and kind of the emotions of what you see. But at the same time, like you said, be sensitive about it. And, you know, Rick Pitino, again, was really great at giving us information at halftime, doing an interview, explaining what was going on. They were very forthcoming with information. And that's kind of what you have to do. You just bring the facts of what you see and what they're telling you. And you don't speculate. You know, that's the worst thing you can do with an injury is speculate, because then you're putting something out there that isn't necessarily correct. And so that's kind of how you handle it. It becomes more of a news story than a sports story in that sense.
When you're giving a report, clearly it can vary and there can be a lot of different things that you can talk about. But what would you estimate the amount of time that you're like generally speaking? Because I think that you have to be more concise to not interrupt the game than a lot of people might reflexively realize.
Oh, yeah. I'm completely cognizant of what's happening in the game. And it's one of the things I make sure of, that my reports are as quick and concise. And sometimes you tend to rush them because you don't want to talk over the play. The last thing you want is you to be giving a report when a pivotal moment is happening in the game, or they miss a dunk and they can't make a call. And you know, the fans are watching to watch the game, and I'm fully aware of that. And we're just adding to it. That's what I'm doing as a reporter, kind of giving the sights and sounds and adding to it, but you don't want to take away from the game. So all of these stories that we research and we find out and anything we're finding out during the game, you have to really put it into 30 seconds. And fortunately, I work with one of the best storytellers in Jim, and when I was with in college football, it was Vern Lundquist. And they're so great at telling these stories that I don't have to do that. I have to add on and, you know, report what I see and hear. And it's just a different perspective, and make sure you don't take away from the game while you're doing it.
You just mentioned that you used to do college football with Vern. You've switched over and you're on the top NFL team on CBS. So that's again with Jim Nance. What's the difference, as you see it, in your job between doing basketball versus doing either pro or college football?
For my job, there's a few things. When it comes to professional football in the NFL, the interviewing at halftime is few and far between. You know, you need to get permission with coaches, and not many like to do it. And I love that aspect. It was one of the best things I loved about doing college football, and it's what I love about doing college basketball. And the NBA, for the little time that I did that as well, is doing those interviews. Hearing from the coaches, I think it brings so much to a broadcast, seeing, you know, the emotion and when they're in certain circumstances, how they're going to handle it. So I love that about college basketball and about college football. I think the other thing, the other big difference is, you know, the game is just longer and it's not as quick, and you have more time to, like you say, tell a story and do a report. There's more players, so there's more stories to tell. So I think that's a big difference with basketball. It is so quick. And you're lucky if you get, you know, one other, you know, you usually do an open and then you do your halftime interview. You're lucky if you get a report or two in the middle there, just because of the pace of the game, and you don't want to disrupt that. So I think, you know, with a 4-hour, 3-hour football game, you get a lot more in, and there's a lot more you can, you know, see and tell to the viewers.
In regards to the storytelling aspect, I imagine there's a lot of pregame prep that you do with various backstories on players or things that may not have to do exactly with the game. And then as a game materializes, there's injuries and there's other things that you might have to address. I assume you go into a game with like a game plan, and then maybe all of it makes it into the game. Maybe some of it does, some of it doesn't. What percentage of the stories that you bring into the beginning of a game do you think wind up making it to air?
In basketball, it's probably about 5%.
Oh, wow.
I mean, you know, you're preparing, and as I tell other reporters that are new to it, and new to this business and doing the tournament for the first time, you know, go in with about 3 or 4 stories per team, you know, and maybe you have a little nugget on each player, or something funny that happened. But to be honest, most of it's not airing. Again, unless it's relevant, you can say, I can add. And if it's the right time, great. But half the time you're going to commercial. Half the time there's an update. Half the time there's a pivotal play and they have to review it so they can't come to you. There's so much more going on in that game. And as I said, it's just so quick. So in football, it's a little easier with the time. In basketball, and my producer is great, you know, just like he is in football, where they do carve some time out. So we had a few good, funny stories that we wanted to make sure got in onto the air, whether it was the story about Butler Blue not being able to be in attendance, or the Mandarin broadcast crew from Dayton. Those are stories we wanted to make sure we got in because it told the story of the team a little bit. And then you can produce that out of commercial. But again, you also have to do it in about 30 seconds. So,
yeah.
You know, I would say it's very few and far between that everything you prepare is going to actually make it on the air.
Those coaching interviews that you spoke about earlier, sometimes it seems like they're pretty hasty in wanting to get them over with. There's the Bo Ryan example several years ago where he really wanted to be anywhere else. But I don't really want to focus on the negative with those. Who are the coaches that you think really go out of their way to provide you and provide the viewers with good content in those halftime interviews?
Well, let me just say one thing about Bo Ryan. He did apologize afterwards, and we've had a great relationship ever since, and he was a pleasure to work with. So
I'm glad to hear that because I went to Wisconsin.
Okay, well, it's just, yeah, exactly. It's sometimes just heat of the moment, you know. I got to be honest, I'm very fortunate. You know, John Beilein, I went to Michigan, but he's great. He's a really good interview. Tom Izzo, and people laugh because I went to Michigan and they're like, oh, your rival? Well, he's one of the best. I always love being around him. Rick Pitino provides great information. Roy Williams with the little daggannit that he throws in there. It's always, you know, a pleasure to do some interviews with. And, you know, I think we have, and we're very lucky, we have four great coaches when it comes to interviews in the Final Four. I mentioned Roy Williams, but you can't go wrong with Frank Martin, Dana Altman, and Mark Few. So I know I'm lucky, and a lot of times I look at those matchups and I look at the teams I'm going to be working with and say, you know what, who do I want to interview at halftime? Who's going to give me some good stuff? And, you know, you kind of cringe if a team comes out and maybe their coach isn't so good at it or doesn't like to do it. And you're like, oh, how do I handle this one? But luckily, I've been around a lot, and the coaches know me. I think they respect me. And as long as you ask the right questions, they're going to give you something good for television.
When I was researching this, I found an interview that you did with NJ.com, the writer Dom Costantino, who's not there anymore. Now he's at Deadspin, but at the time he was there. And you had a really kind of weird story about Bobby Valentine where you kind of wowed him with your preparation, but he did not like go into it giving you the benefit of the doubt. Can you tell that story now?
Yeah. I mean, I was trying to get on the air and I was working for News 12 Long Island. I was basically a producer at the time for the legendary Bob Wolf. And I was doing Mets opening day at Shea Stadium, which it was called at the time. And, you know, I was fully prepared. And I was also one of the few women. I don't even think I remember another woman there at the time. And I'm in huddle, you know, the gangbang reporting that you do where everyone's, you know, huddled around Bobby Valentine. And I stick a microphone in his face and I ask him about his pitching. And he looked at me like I was, you know, crazy, like I had two heads. And I'm like, and he gives me like a nothing answer. And I follow right back up with like some stats and explain it. And I said, you know, so how are you going to do that? And he looked at me and he was like, huh, okay. And then he answered it, got a great soundbite out of it. And yeah, it felt like I lad him over a little bit and I earned a little respect. And we went back to the studio and my cameraman like queued it up and we went to go edit it. And he goes, did you see this? And as I was, as on the video, you could see he looked over and we caught him on tape going, who's that broad? So, you know, if I ever write a book, that is going to be the title of my book.
So how do you manage all of the travel and the preparation with family life? Because a lot of sideline reporters are maybe in their 20s or early 30s and haven't yet had started a family, and they're more able to like just devote all of their consciousness to their work. But I was wondering how you manage both of your professional and your personal lives together.
Yeah, it's not easy, I'm going to be honest. And look, I've been doing this way before I had kids and a family. I actually told my husband when I first met him and we started dating, I said, we're not getting married till I get on the air. And it's because I wanted him to realize what I was going to go through, what my schedule would be like, where I would have to maybe move to potentially. And I didn't want to be held back from that. But he, you know, was completely committed, which is, of course, why I married him. And I could not do it without him because he basically plays Mr. Mom on the weekends while he has a full-time job during the week. So wow. I have three kids, ages 5, 7, and 10, all boys. So you could only imagine what my our sports schedule is when I am not home. And then when I am home, I'm basically a chauffeur, taking them everywhere they want to be, running them back and forth to school, to sports, doing homework with them. And I'm all hands-on when I'm home. I make sure I do my work while they're at school and when they're asleep. So I may be up till, 11, 12 at night getting stuff done just because I want to be with them and spend that time. You know, the hardest part is really missing things, missing the first day of school, missing, holidays, missing trips, missing plays, all of that kind of stuff. But they're so good because they just get it. I think they've been around it. They understand what my job is. Sometimes they get perks. They're going to come with me to the Final Four. So they have to look at that. And I know they think that's pretty cool. And, and my husband does a great job. And I have great, family and friends that surround me. But I tell everyone that gets in this business, every woman and male, that it is a big juggling act. And it is, as someone once told me before, it is a lot of managing chaos. You never know what kind of call you're going to get on the road. Your son has 104 fever and he just had to be taken home from school and you don't know how to get him to the doctor and you're, across the country. I've had those scares and several more, but you know what? We get through it and I'm lucky that I'm able to do, the two things that I love most in my life, and that's be a mother and be able to do this job. So I'm lucky that I can combine those two. And I have a lot of people that help me do that.
I know you're super busy this week getting ready for the Final Four. Is there anything that we didn't discuss that you think is really interesting, either about this upcoming weekend or the general mechanics of sideline reporting?
No, I think you asked a lot of great questions. I mean, this is an event and people ask me all the time, what do you like covering better, the NFL or the Final Four? And you can't pick, and I always say I love covering regular season football and I love covering postseason basketball. There is nothing like March Madness in the Final Four. And if you haven't experienced it, you have to. And it's that tradition and that passion. And as you mentioned it, the four fan bases coming together, and it's just exhilarating. And the highs and lows of the month and watching these kids. And the one thing that stuck out to me this month so far is watching those Kentucky players after they lost that heartbreaking game to North Carolina. And, a lot of them are one and done. And you saw De'Aaron Fox in the locker room. I don't know if you saw the video. He couldn't control himself, sobbing. And you think these kids don't care because they're going to go off and play in the NBA next year. But it just goes to show you how much they really do care. And it's unfortunate that he's not going to be able to experience it again because I know this is the best time of their life. And North Carolina, they told me this. This is why they wanted to get back after last year's loss, not only to avenge it, because they said this was the most fun they ever had playing basketball was being at the Final Four. And I think it's just a special, special event, and I'm just so lucky to be a part of it.
Thank you, Tracy. We really appreciate your time. Great luck this weekend, and we're all going to be seeing a lot of your work that both this weekend and over the foreseeable future.
Thanks, guys, for having me.
Have a good rest of the week. I'm not strong.
if I don't notice you. Familiar touch turns stranger. Touch turns stranger.